This is Stuart Molina, podcasting from my home office in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Our next Masterworks concert with the Harrisburg Symphony Orchestra features music of love and fairy tales. The first half of the program is devoted to love music by Richard Wagner, but the two pieces that we're playing, the Siegfried Idyll and the love music from Tristan and Isolde, couldn't be more polarly opposite in terms of the kind of love they're portraying and also in the musical language which Wagner uses. The Siegfried Idyll was written as a present for his wife Cosima after the birth of their son Siegfried. And it was written well before the opera Siegfried, and he uses some of these motives that he uses in the Siegfried Idyll in the opera later on. But it's been noted by several critics that the moments where this music appears seem out of place. They seem in a different context than the rest of the opera. And so it seems to me that maybe he's using these as some kind of an inside joke between him and his wife. I know a lot of composers do things like that, and certainly in my olden days in college where I was writing music, I often did that just for the amusement of my friends. But that's neither here nor there. The Siegfried Idyll is gentle, introspective, intimate music. And it uses a fairly straightforward harmonic language. As you'll see when we get to the music from Tristan und Isolde, the music is a lot more adventuresome harmonically and a lot less solid harmonically. It's constantly moving in different places. The Siegfried Idyll, on the other hand, stays very much within a standard harmony framework. The piece is in three major sections. The first is built around this following motive. The two major components of that melody are the rising scale and the descending seventh, which comes in the middle of the phrase. The music here is very simple, very relaxed, very satisfied, no Sturm und Drang, no sense of inner turmoil, just relaxed, beautiful, lyrical. At one point in this opening section, he does expand on the descending seventh, and you have a passage of music that sounds like this. Here we get a little bit of a more adventurous approach to harmony. We're no longer just in the world of major chords and dominant seventh chords, but rather ninth chords and various other extended harmony chords. The other spot that I would like to highlight in this opening section is towards the end, where the music builds up in passion and we reach an augmented chord. An augmented chord is two major thirds on top of each other. And we hear it for the first time in the following section. I'll play just a little bit so you can hear how it lands on this chord. And so on. The augmented chord takes on major importance in the second section of this piece, after a little bit of an interlude, where we hear a simple melody in the oboe. We have kind of a mysterious dreamlike transition, where Wagner clearly is setting the boundaries for a new section, and this ends with a trill on a B-flat 7 chord. And then on a B natural, and we hear the augmented chord in the woodwinds. And it sits there for just a moment. It's a little bit shocking, because we haven't heard much of this harmony before in this piece. But then it expands into a very beautiful melody, which will be the core melody of the second section of the piece. This continues in almost a mesmerizing repetition. We hear the various segments of that simple melody in repetition, and then it will go up chromatically, step by step, building in tension. And that makes the thrust of this second part. And eventually the melody will become triumphant in its scope, and the whole orchestra, small chamber orchestra granted, but everyone playing together, playing this second theme in a much more triumphal way, the heroic music of Siegfried. And this leads us into the third major section, which is introduced just by the two horns, one on a low pedal note and the other playing a simple melody above it. And you'll hear interspersed with this horn melody some of the woodwinds playing bird song. This is a very brief interruption, as the orchestra then will build and build even more and return to the triumphal version of the second section's theme, this time enhanced by the entrance of the trumpet, the only trumpet in the orchestra, which gives it, again, a little bit more of a majestic feeling, a little bit more of a heroic feeling. And then the piece will wind down in the final section, returning to the music of the opening part of this piece, and winding down almost as a lullaby to this newborn baby. This is really a singular piece in the Wagner canon for a few reasons. First of all, Wagner did not write a lot of music that wasn't opera. He wrote, obviously, many operas, including the monumental Ring Cycle, Der Meistersinger, Tristan und Isolde, many of the greatest German operas of all time. But he didn't write a lot of orchestral music, and this is such a gem. The other thing that's interesting about this piece is that it was a gift to his wife, and he only published it at a point in his life when he needed income. I don't think it was his intention to share it with the world. And so when we're hearing this very tender, delicate love letter of a piece to his wife, it almost feels like we're mischievously peering into someone else's private life. Maybe that adds a little bit of a thrill, but I think it also gives us a sense of the lighter side of this generally rotten individual, Richard Wagner. He was not a kind soul, by and large. There were aspects of his personality that were abhorrent, but clearly there was also a side that was deeply in love with his wife, that was deeply in love with his son, and that was capable of writing this very tender, very lovely piece of chamber orchestra music.